It is indeed an honor to be trusted with this pulpit. Am I correct that today, or maybe tomorrow, is the longest day of the year? 21st? Well, I'm gonna try my best not to make this sermon make this day seem any longer. Okay. As I said, it's a privilege to be here. In the children's story, we talked about make-believe, and I want to continue that theme. Why have Americans murdered 50 million of their own babies in the past 40 years? Why is there a desperate and determined effort on the part of our civil leaders and our media to publicize and to validate homosexuality in our culture? Some call it a lifestyle, but maybe more properly it could be called a death style. Why do American soldiers fight in wars that are undeclared by Congress against people that never attacked our country? In the words of the psalmist, why do the nations rage? Why do we have women serving in combat positions in America's armed forces? Why does the federal government continually and consistently violate the Constitution, the supreme law of the land, by aggrandizing to itself powers and authorities that are not granted to it by we the people? Why does the government fear and suspect those who call on them to follow the Constitution and label them as terrorists? Why do the nations rage? And the people plot a vain thing. Why is there a determined effort by civil government and the media to misrepresent the true meaning of separation of church and state? Almost every day we hear about a court handing down decisions in cases and controversies that are manifestly absurd. Why does this keep happening? Why are the children of Christian parents abandoning and renouncing their faith as they pass through the public school system and the private school system? Why is there a 40-year war on poverty that has not conquered poverty? Why is there a 40-year war on drugs that has not conquered drug abuse? Why do the nations rage? Why is Christianity itself under attack and persecution in America? Why is there a war on terror, which will most likely never end because terror is not an enemy, but rather is the tactic of an enemy? Why do senators and congressmen in Washington vote on legislation that they have never read? Why do lawmakers in Annapolis swear to support the Maryland Constitution and then never even read it? Why are our schools unsafe to send our children? Why is our country in such a mess? Why do the nations rage? The answer, I suggest, is right there in Psalm 2, where the question is posed. Please turn to Psalm 2. Why do the nations rage? And the people plot a vain thing. The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let's break their bonds in pieces and cast away their cords from us. Let's break the law. He who sits in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall hold them in derision. And by the way, derision is the important word here. He's not laughing because he thinks it's funny. This is a derisive laugh that's described here by the psalmist. Then he shall speak to them in his wrath and distress them in his deep displeasure. Yes, I have set my king on my holy hill of Zion. I will declare the decree the Lord has sent to me. You are my son. Today I have begotten you. Ask of me and I will give you the nations for your inheritance. So the nations belong to him and the ends of the earth for your possessions. The earth belongs to him. You shall break them with the rod of iron. You shall dash them to pieces like a potter's vessel. Not unlike we read in Josiah this morning in Bible study. Now, therefore, be wise, O kings, and remember what Proverbs 1:7 says. Where does wisdom begin? Be instructed, you judges of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear, the fear of the Lord. It's right here again, repeated in Psalm 2, just like it's in Proverbs 1. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and you perish in the way when his wrath is kindled but a little. Blessed are those who put their trust in him. Why did the nations rage? The nations, our nation in particular, is playing a dangerous game make believe. We're playing in traffic. We're holding a serpent. A dangerous, poisonous serpent. We're playing make believe that God isn't God and His word isn't law. In the second verse, the kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord. And in the verse 3 saying, let's break their bonds in pieces. The bonds being the law of God, the word of the Lord. Let's break them in pieces and let's cast away those cords from us because it's inconvenient. The law of God requires things. It's inconvenient. So let's make believe, dangerously, that that doesn't exist. And that we can do what we want. But I would suggest to you that this wasn't always so. Indeed, the documents of our founding actually spell out what Americans believe. I'm going to ask you to turn to that little yellow piece of paper and go to the part that looks like one of those kids' games where you draw circles and find the words under the presuppositions of American policy. Number one, of course, says Wetabsi, which means we hold these truths to be self-evident. This is a profession of belief. Our Declaration of Independence actually is not a very long document, but about three-quarters or four-fifths of it are really a list of complaints against the King of England and against the Parliament about the things they had done to place themselves in the place of God, the foolish and dangerous things that they had done. And about three-quarters or maybe four-fifths of the document is a list of complaints that lays out those things. But before they began that list, they did something much more important. Because if, in fact, the presupposition is that the king is law, King George III, if whatever he said was law, then, of course, you could have 28 complaints against him, which is how many they listed in the Declaration of Independence, or perhaps you could have 128 complaints, or you could have 1,028 complaints. What would it matter? If whatever he said was law, if he was the lawmaker and the lawgiver, what would it matter how many complaints you had against him? It would just be nonsensical. So our founders didn't begin with their complaints. They began with what I'm calling their presuppositions, which is what they believed to be given before they even began the argument, before they began the list of complaints. And they began this list of beliefs by saying, we hold these truths to be self-evident. Now, to say that a truth is self-evident is to say, I'm not even going to present you argument for it. We hold this to be patent and clear. It's self-evident. This was the mindset of the people in America they were talking to. First of all, they said, we hold these truths to be self-evident. Well, what do you have to presuppose to say that we hold this truth to be self-evident? The first thing you have to presuppose is there is such a thing as truth. But even that is in question in our culture today, in our make-believe culture today. I've told this story many times. I'm sure you've heard it. I was at a fundraising activity for a school one time, and I got into this conversation with one of the board directors, and he said, truth is relative. It depends on what you believe. And I said, well, wait a minute. Are you're saying there's a truth for you and a truth for me and a truth for her? And he said, yes, of course. I said, are you absolutely certain that the statement you just made is absolutely true? Of course, you see how the argument folds on itself. How can he make a statement that it's true that there's no such thing as truth? It's a circular argument. But our founders said, these truths, we're not even going to bother explaining the background of these because we hold these to be self-evident. If you look at number two, tamachi, of course. Tamachi means that all men are created equal, not evolved equal, but created equal. It's a very, very different thing. So beyond saying that there's that there's such a thing as absolute truth, our founders, their very first presupposition of American polity, of American law and government, is that there is a God. There is a creator God. You have to presuppose a creator God to make a statement like that all men are created equal. Otherwise, the statement is nonsensical, is it not? That they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. I know you memorized all this. This is why I didn't bother writing it out. Just thought I'd put the initials here. You memorized this as school children because somebody told you it was important. And you listened. So beyond the fact that there is a God, our rights come from him. This is a presupposition. This is what we believe. That among these, it just lists some of the rights, are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Notice that the government doesn't have rights. It has powers, and those powers are derived, they're really of God, but they're derived from the consent of the governed, according to this manifesto of American belief. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, the ends we just talked about, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundations upon such principles and organizing its powers in such fashion as to them shall seem most likely to effect their safety and happiness. Okay? So this is for the good of all that we publish this manifesto before we make our complaints. Otherwise, the complaint's going to fall on absolute deaf ears. It won't make any sense. So this is what I would suggest to you Americans believe. If you actually turn the page over and look toward the bottom of the page, this is really a summary of what we've just said, of what they said concisely and precisely in the Declaration of Independence. This is the American view of law and government. First of all, there is a creator God. Secondly, our rights come from him. The purpose of government is to protect those rights, those God-given rights that we just described. That goes on to say, if any government doesn't do this, you should get rid of it. Because this is real. This is what we believe. Now, I would just use the word real. Let me talk about that for just a second. I would suggest that our founders did this not because they were interested in just some other form of government, because they didn't like what was happening in England or under English rule, but they were seeking to form a government that was based on reality. And they saw a biblical view of law and government, because I've just described this as the American view, but in fact, it's the biblical view. And they thought, well, that's the real view, not just some alternative view. It's the real view. So why don't we build a government based on reality, not some make-believe, but something real? So they looked to the Bible as their source of authority to determine what was real. And if you look at the top of that, I didn't say, by the way, that this was the only view of law and government. I just said it was American and biblical. There are others. And if you look up at the top of that side of the page, I want to discuss for a minute the struggle of the worldview that's in play here, because the American view of law and government is based on that religious belief, that faith that there is a God, our rights come from him, and the purpose of civil government is to protect and secure God-given rights. There is a God, our rights come from him, and the purpose of civil government is to protect and secure God-given rights. That's the American view, just quintessentially. It's not the only view. There are views of government which say that the purpose of government is to redistribute wealth. There are purposes that the purpose of government is to take from A and give to B, because A has more than he's produced more than he needs, and B hasn't done that, so he needs it. And of course, we as the government will be the arbiter of what needs to be taken and given. And in order to do that, we must own all, have control of all. So there has been, throughout the history of man, this struggle of worldviews. If you look at it side by side, you might call the left column, I already described it as that which is real, so we might describe the right column as unreal. If you describe the left column as biblical, you might describe the right column as pagan. If you might describe the left column as something based on a biblical faith, you might describe the right column as something based on a faithless faith or make-believe, a false faith or a make-believe. I would suggest to you that the reason that the nation rages is because we're operating over on the right side of this chart. Let's look at it a minute. Under the American view, the biblical view, the state is divinely ordained. God has said that there should be civil government. If you look at Luke, the 20th chapter, where they try to trick Jesus it was lawyers trying to trick him, saying to him, should we pay taxes to Caesar or not? He said, show me the coin. He didn't answer the question directly. He didn't say, it's all right to pay tribute to an unrighteous or an ungodly government. He didn't say that. He said, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, but to God the things that are God's. So in that statement, he gave Caesar an authority that had heretofore never been given. That is to say, he confirmed that there was a legitimate thing called civil government. And you should render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. But in the same breath, he said, but to God the things that are God, indicating that Caesar's jurisdiction is limited. So civil government is divinely ordained in the biblical view, but it's limited. The authority of the state, the authority of Caesar, is limited. It's okay to be patriotic about our country because for the reason that we see God's plan unfolding in the work of our country and our nation. This is all based on the idea, the very first statement of our founders, that we are created and the world is created and nations are created. Over on the pagan side, and we could call this socialist, we could call it Marxist, we could call it communist, we could call it a lot of different things. I call it pagan because it's not biblical, just to show the contrast. We have the idea that the state itself is divine, that all blessings come from the state, that it's going to take care of you from womb to tomb, from cradle to grave, take care of all your health care, it's going to take care of all your needs, and if you have more needs, we'll just take the money from somewhere else, or we'll print it so that we can satisfy your needs, or at least we'll promise you that, okay? And the state is seen as divine. And of course, if the state is divine, its authority, of course, is unlimited, because God's authority is unlimited. So if you see the state as God, you see the state's authority as unlimited. In this case, of course, we worship the state. We don't have patriotic sentiment for our country, but we actually worship the state, my country, right or wrong. Whatever my country does, I will stand behind and I will swear to and I will follow. It was one time said on the floor of Congress years and years ago that saying my country, right or wrong, is like saying my mother drunk or sober. If my mother is drunk, it's my job to get her straight. It's my job to get her sober. It's my job to care for her and those she may be affecting with her drunkenness. So to say my country, right or wrong, is to say that my country is God. And that would be a statement that would come from this right side of the chart. Of course, all of this idea of law and government is based on the idea that your great-great-granddaddy was some hunk of primordial ooze, and that your granddaddy was some eely thing that slithered up onto a bank and grew legs, and then your daddy was a monkey. And so what are you? You are just a mass of mutations and mistakes. So this is the view of government that we pretty much live under today. And the incredible kind of dissonance that exists, I think, for us is that the documents of our founding and the statements of our founders, the quotations, their letters, their source of authority, all indicates this left side of the chart. There may be some exceptions, but for the most part, our founders universally shared a biblical worldview, even those who we may have considered to have been apostate in some ways. They shared a biblical worldview. That worldview is not in play today. It's not in operation today. Why do the nations rage? Because we're playing make-believe, and it's very, very dangerous to do so. We are playing in traffic. Finally, I want to talk for a moment about this vain thing that we're doing, this make-believe, this playing in traffic, and probably the greatest vehicle of that vanity is the false understanding of what separation of church and state means. We have been indoctrinated into a false understanding of what separation of church and state means. And you know, like all great lies, there's an element of truth, because there is such a thing as separation of church and state. The church and the state have different functions under God's law. Even in the Bible, you had the tribe of the kings came from Judah and the priests came from Levite. There was a separation of the functions and the duties of church and civil government. When I say state, let's read the First Amendment. If somebody said to you, separation of church and state is in our First Amendment, you should actually have the First Amendment memorized, or you should always have a little piece of paper in your pocket that quotes the First Amendment. Let's read the First Amendment for a minute. Let me read it out loud. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of the speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. First of all, the First Amendment is a limitation on Congress. Congress shall make no law. Okay? Do you see, by the way, when we're finished today, just cut that out and put it in your purse or put it in your wallet. Congress shall make no law respecting established religion. Where are the words separation of church and state in the First Amendment? Do you see them? The word separation is not there. The word church is not there. The word state is not there. I will concede that the word of is there five times. The word of is there. But the concept, the modern day concept of separation of church and state, just to be brief, is separation of God and government. The way church separation of church and state is modern day proclaimed is really a separation of God and government. But look right up at the top of that page, or else turn back to the other page. There is a creator God is the very first presupposition of American law and policy. Do you see a problem here? The very first presupposition of American polity is that there is a God. But then we say we separate God from government. Those two are completely inconsistent with each other. Those two notions, those two ideas are completely inconsistent. If you wanted to destroy American government and the American view of government, where would you begin? You'd begin by separating God from government, wouldn't you? And perhaps you would be as an evil genius enough to come up with an idea that that's what separation of church and state means. Doesn't mean that at all. Do you want Hillary Clinton administering the sacraments? Do you want the church organizing an army to protect the southern border of the United States? It's not the right function. There are different functions. That's what separation of church and state means. It doesn't mean that there's a separation of God from government. Indeed, there can't be. And ladies and gentlemen, to proclaim that there is a separation of God and government is a vain thing. and the plot to do so has been a vain thing. It's a dangerous game of make-believe, and I urge us not to play it. Let me ask you to stand, and we'll pray, and then I'll ask Tom to give the benediction, okay? Lord, we ask you to give us the discernment to never play this dangerous game of make-believe, to acknowledge and to, in all our ways, acknowledge you in all our ways, and not to lean on our own understanding, and that you will direct our path.